how quickly did this deal come together? Like from the first, I don't know if you could, you know, I don't expect a TikTok breakdown, but sort of the first discussion to actually the handshake and the signing.
I mean, we started the process, you know, in the early summertime in July, and it had ebbs and flows throughout the summer and early in the season. And there was periods of time where we talked to the team pretty intently, and then it would, you know, kind of go quiet for a bit. And that had a lot to do with timing of season starting and training camp and all those types of things. So it really, in the last 2-3 weeks, picked up. You know, Judd Muldaver, who is Austin's, you know, primary agent, mm-hmm. Met with Kyle on a couple of occasions. The three of us got together a couple other occasions. And then just the last couple of days, you know, prior to yesterday, we kind of hammered out the final details. But it was a good process. There was no period in time where either side was thinking that we couldn't accomplish a contract extension, and it never got to a point where there was any animosity or anything like that. It was a very good collaborative process.
You know, I found it interesting, Jeff, listening to Austin talk about this as the whole process went on. You know, I mean, if anybody's looking for a playbook for how a young player should handle negotiations, I mean, Austin provided it. He answered questions. There was no sense of drama. Even yesterday, you know, he was very comfortable talking about the, you know, how things kind of moved from a 7 or 8 year deal to a 5 year deal. In these negotiations, how much does the personality of the player impact how agents go about their business? You know, I mean, I'm sure you guys have a philosophy as an agent, and you've got, you've been an assistant GM. I mean, you've been involved in hockey for a long time. Everybody has their own philosophy. But does the player's emotional approach or lack of emotional approach to negotiations have an impact when you go to sit down with Kyle or whomever?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, look, the client is the boss at the end of the day, and we're here to provide our experience and guidance and really, you know, do our homework and use all of our experience to get the best deal possible. But for sure, having a client like Austin, who is very mature and very self-assured, not arrogant, very, very confident. But yeah, you know, your point about yesterday, the way he handled the questions and his humility and some sense of humor and all of those things. I mean, I think that comes obviously from his mom and dad, and, you know, Judd Muldaver, who joined me as a partner with Wasserman Orr Hockey a few months ago, has a very long and close relationship with the family. And, you know, he spoke with Brian a lot and was kind of shepherded through the whole process with Brian and Emma. And, you know, they were fantastic. You know, there was no pressure from the player. Like, we got to get this done. It was just, you know, you guys, I'll go play. I'll do what I have to do. And you guys do what you have to do. And so it does make it makes it easier when you don't have a client who's, you know, worried about it and asking every day what's happening, for sure. I mean, it just makes the process. And I give a lot of credit to Judd and to Brian for shepherding that whole throughout the entire process.
Every negotiation has some give and take in it. Where, you know, looking back at it now, what from a neutral's point of view would you say was Austin's, you know, where Austin gave the most? Is it the classic trade-off, shorter contract for more money? I mean, that's how it's been painted in some quarters. I don't want to get into the whole details of negotiation because it's, I think a lot of people, frankly, wouldn't be able to understand it, and I sure wouldn't either. But was there an area where Austin sort of gave a little bit, now that you can look back at this, in order to get something in return?
I think that he Austin answered the question really succinctly yesterday when he said we looked at all possibilities on term, and given the puzzle that the Leafs have with their cap situation and, you know, their unique situation with the players that they have in their lineup, the good young players, I wouldn't even say that we gave up something. There is a risk when a player takes a shorter contract because, you know, players can always get injured and not career ending injury type of thing because you have insurance for that. But if, you know, if a player gets hurt somewhere in the middle of his contract, there's a risk if you don't have a longer term contract. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, Austin wants to be a Maple Leaf for a very long time. And like you said yesterday, like, you know, reach the ultimate goal and he loves playing here. So, you know, an 8-year deal would probably have been his preference, but it wasn't going to work that way. And so I think that to answer your question, probably the shorter term is the one thing that we had as a, you know, a box when mm-hmm. we started this process, and it didn't get checked, but everything else did. And I think that, you know, both sides are happy with where we ended up.
You know this market. You know this market pretty well. And did that familiarity with Kyle, with the Leafs, with just, you know, how things are, did that help you? You know, and I don't want to say that you had a bigger role than anybody else. Your name was brought up by both Kyle and Austin yesterday. But did that maybe understanding of the Toronto market help? Do you think? And sort of just kind of some of an understanding you might have of the internal dynamics of the Leafs, MLSE, and things of that nature?
I suppose it did. I did work there for 5 years, and I do have relationships with people in the organization, including Kyle. I think that probably having gone through a similar process, similar but different with Connor McDavid a couple of years ago, that allowed me to provide, you know, Judd and Brian and Austin with some background, I guess. You know, Judd took the lead on these negotiations. He did a fantastic job. I was there to support. We had, you know, we talked multiple times on a daily basis, but, you know, he really spearheaded the thing. And I think just having, you know, having been on the management side and negotiated a lot of NHL contracts on that side, and then being, you know, on this side for the past number of years and doing, you know, doing Ekblad's deal and doing Connor's deal and some others, it helped me. It was not specific to the Toronto market. There's a little bit of insight there, but I think when you get to a player of this magnitude, it's more league-wide, if that makes sense.
Yep. This might be an unfair question. I'm going to ask it anyhow and take it in the spirit that it's meant. How would you compare this negotiation to Connor's? Again, as you say, Judd was the lead agent here. But can you compare the negotiations? Were they similar? You know,
I'll answer the question by like going back to your question previously.
Okay.
You know, every player has a different mindset, and, you know, not to get into the weeds too much on Connor, but he was prepared. He wanted to, you know, commit to Edmonton. They had, you know, they had gone and had a successful playoff that year. He didn't want to go through a season where he was being asked every day about his contract. They didn't have, you know, they didn't have a Mitch Marner or a William Nylander situation or, you know, other players looming on the horizon in Edmonton. They had Draisaitl, and that was it. So it was different. You really can't compare the two. The two players are very similar in the fact that they're humble and confident and really good players, but it wasn't, don't get me wrong, Connor wasn't calling every day, is this getting done? But that's what he wanted to do, and that's kind of the course that we set with him, and it got done, you know, as you recall, like in early July, and it took a few months, but it was just a bit different, that's all.
As part of these negotiations, did the topic of the Leafs captaincy come up? This is a bit of a housekeeping question, but did the topic of the captaincy come out?
No, okay. We never discussed it.
Okay. Some people are saying, Jeff, that, you know, John Tavares coming to Toronto, what we're seeing with Panarin, Austin, you know, sort of going on a 5-year deal, showing a lot of faith in himself, the ability to get another contract as a free agent, that it's a sign of maybe, I'm going to use the phrase the player power, but there's a sign that maybe NHL players are becoming a little, they're a little more open to being bolder. Do you see that? And, you know, have you seen that develop over the years, both from, you know, from your role as a player, executive, and now agent?
I think the biggest change is obviously that the second contract for the premier players has, you know, it's changed dramatically over the last 3 or 4 years. And to me, that actually makes a lot of sense in as this system kind of resets itself, because you're getting the player when he's in his absolute prime at, you know, 22, 23. And people argue, well, they're not, you know, they're not really in their prime until they're 25 or 26. And I'm not sure that that's the case. You're looking at players who are dominating the league and playing at a very high level when they're 20, 21, 22. So that part of it, you know, being reset is the biggest change. As far as players becoming militant, or whatever the term you want to use, or a bit more, you know, proactive, it goes in ebbs and flows, and it all has to do with a team situation. In Toronto's case, in this case with Austin, it was a lot to do with their salary cap puzzle and the fact that they're, you know, Austin wants to play in Toronto and he wants to win. And just like all the other guys in that room, they have a goal, and it made for the fact that a 5-year deal was the only one that was going to make sense for him. Other players, different terms make sense for, and you know, like I said, Connor wanted an 8-year deal. There used to be a real, you know, push to have 5-year deals way back when the salary cap system was put in place with Sidney and Malkin and Jonathan Toews and Kane. They all did 5-year deals. And then it switched to 8 a bit. Now there's an ebb and flow, and it's going back to maybe shorter terms, but it all has to do with the team situation at the time of signing the player. To me, that's the determining factor.
Jeff, how much of a role do analytics play in these negotiations? I know that's a little off the beaten path, but, you know, I mean, I cover baseball, and analytics is, you know, I mean, it's sort of the focal point for a lot of discussions now. When you're negotiating with an NHL team, like, do they come armed with analytics, and you guys come armed with analytics? Has that become more and more a factor in discussions?
It comes up in negotiations, but with a player like Austin, it didn't. I mean, we all know on our side and on the Leafs side the underlying analytics. Mm-hmm. You know, how effective he is as a defensive player. It's not just about goal scoring, all those things, but I think when you're talking about a player of his ilk, you don't really need to get into the weeds and argue about, you know, right, do I agree with, you know, his possession numbers and things like that. It certainly is relevant in a lot of negotiations, particularly on the agent side, when you're trying to, you know, squeeze value for a player who may not have, you know, 80 points, but is a very important player, and you have to try to, you know, illuminate why he's important, and you use it then. But in this case, we all just accepted that Austin is Austin, and he's a very good player, and he, you know, he's on a trajectory to be, you know, a top player in the league, and that was the basis of, you know, the negotiation, not, you know, whether his analytics were aligned, mm-hmm, with what we thought.